Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
But we'll get into that. Hey, real quick, as we wait for Nolan to get Kevin back on the phone, Maryland taking on Wisconsin. Wisconsin is really in a tough go of it if they lose to the Terps. All right, Kevin's back. Thank you, Nolan. And we'll get into that. Let's go to Kevin again. Sorry, Kevin, how you feeling?
I'm feeling good, guys. You know, 1-1 is better than 0-2, as Calvin always said, and that's where the Ravens are with that big Detroit game coming up in week number 3.
Now that you bring him up, thank you very much. Great segue. Kyle Van Noy is week to week with the hamstring, and we heard the Mike Green talk during the update here as he got a lot of snaps because of Van Noy's injury against the Browns, but we'll talk about him. But what about David Ajabo? I mean, the Ravens are going to need someone to fill that roster spot, perhaps someone to get at the quarterback, Jared Goff. So could this be an Ajabo opportunity?
I think it could be an opportunity, but I more so am kind of focused on Mike Green. It's essentially, you know, everybody climbs up a rung on the ladder. And I think for Ajabo, he would kind of fill in for, I guess, Mike Green. And Mike Green would kind of move into that much more full-time role. And Ajabo would kind of be situational and, you know, play a decent amount of snaps. Not a ton of them, but I think that the three, if Fenway has to miss that time, it, you know, that's something that feels like it's going to happen. If that is the case, then I think the three of Owe, and then you also have Tavius Robinson, you also have Mike Green. I feel decently confident in those guys. I think that, you know, Van Noy had a rough game against the Bills, but he's a guy that's a veteran and has been really good for the Ravens over the last 2 years, and he's going to be someone that you want on the field at all times. So, unfortunately, you know, the injury happens, but I've been really impressed with what I've seen from Mike Green. You know, you do have the depth in Ajabo. Maybe they call someone up from the practice squad on game days here as well. You can do that if you want to, but I think for me, Mike Green is going to be the biggest benefit. I guess, you know, he's the guy that's going to benefit, I guess, the most from the injury. You never want to see a guy get injured, but I think that we're going to have a lot of snaps from Mike Green over the next couple of weeks if Kyle Van Noy can't go.
Now, Kevin, the thing that kind of hurts is I thought Van Noy was playing great, you know, against Cleveland. I mean, he was dominating. He was killing that right tackle. I mean, just wearing them out around the corner, stunting back inside. Now, Mike Green, Mike had like one nice one, you know, where he had Joe's ankle and stuff, but he's rocking back. He's just not playing fast yet. His get off, his takeoff, he's got a much better takeoff than what he has shown so far. I still think he's thinking too much and, you know, maybe playing more and playing this week and, you know, will kind of ignite him, but it hadn't kicked in yet.
Yeah, and I think for a rookie, just rookies in general, sometimes that's what happens, where we know a guy has talent, we know a guy is maybe better than what they're showing, you know. And you saw in the rep where he almost got to Joe and, you know, literally was maybe an inch away from getting
his sack. Yeah,
he was going down and Joe just kind of flung the ball away. You saw that of like, okay, this is Mike Green. This is the Mike Green that we know is in there. And, I, you know, I'm not expecting Mike to, like, win every rep and go out there and perform that way as a rookie. But I do think that, you know, the difference between Kyle Van Noy and Mike Green right now is, look, Kyle Van Noy is a multiple-time Super Bowl champion. He's been there. He's done that. He understands, you know, the NFL game. And for Mike Green, it's kind of like, all right, now it's going to be his third NFL game. He hasn't necessarily played in every down role for a full game before, and you're going and playing, or I guess Detroit's coming to you, and you're playing a really tough Detroit team. It's going to be a really tall task. Not that he can't do it, but, you know, I think as a rookie, those expectations, you know, they can sometimes be daunting, and you know, Mike's confident. He understands the gravity of the situation, and I believe in him fully, but I do think that, you know, I saw conversations on social media like, oh, Kyle Van Noy is like old and he's washed. And, you know, I agree with you. I thought he played well before going down in that Cleveland game. That's something that you're going to miss. So I hope Mike Green can step up for him in the event he does have to miss some time. But, you know, it's a lot easier said than done, I think, for that.
Now, Kevin, would you agree that that's probably Roquan's best game as a Raven?
I would have to go back. Maybe his debut. I mean, he was great against New Orleans in that first game, but I would think that this is one of, if not his best. I'd probably say it was his best. And it's crazy because you look at the box score, he had 15 tackles and the touchdown and tackles for loss and all that. But it went beyond the box score, and his box score was unreal where, you know, he was stopping guys. There was one play where running back, it might have been Jerome Ford or Dylan Sampson, I can't remember who, you know, kind of cut to the outside on the left side of the field and had green grass in front of him, and Roquan swings him down for a 3-yard gain only after picking up the first down, and it could have been a lot worse there. And you could see the motivation he had. You know, he's a guy that, in my opinion, like, he's a great player, sometimes a bit inconsistent, and you know, that's kind of what the next step for him is. He has to solve that, and that's what kind of comes with being an $100 million linebacker, you know, someone that was traded for a second-round pick, and the Ravens gave that up for him. Those expectations are going to be there. Look, you're supposed to be one of the best, if not the best, inside linebackers in the game on a week-to-week basis. And this was the player that the Ravens traded for, the tenacity, the speed, the ability to make splash plays. He was flying around the field. Like, you could see every play how motivated he was. And I think the defense kind of got that wake-up call in week one. It wasn't just Roquan. I thought Kyle Hamilton played with that same viciousness. I thought other guys played with that same viciousness. And that's what they have to do week in, week out. You know, I don't want it to become for them. They have to use a loss to have that motivation and that viciousness. For them, obviously, it has to come week to week, and they have to keep that energy up for the rest of the season.
Kevin Ostreicher, USA Today, the Ravens Wire, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. All right, Kevin, last thing for you. We look ahead to Monday night against Detroit. Ravens defense did their job against a Cleveland offense that was suspect with a 40-plus-year-old quarterback a week after getting shredded by Josh Allen in the fourth quarter in their season opener. Now Detroit comes in after Green Bay spanked them in week one, but they put 52 up on the Bears. So real quick, what Ravens defense shows up? What Lions offense shows up? Or how much does Zach Orr going to have to do with that?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I think it'll probably be in the middle for both teams. The Lions offense is worlds better than what the Browns presented to the Ravens on Sunday. And I think for, you know, that Lions offense, well, the Bears don't necessarily have that great of a defense, and I think the Ravens defense is a lot better than that. So I think it will kind of be the tale of kind of two Ravens teams, I would probably say, on Monday night. Now, I expect that game to really be really close and really fun. Obviously, the Lions still trying to figure things out without Ben Johnson, although they looked like they figured things out in week number two. So I guess that conversation is now over. But, yeah, I mean, look, Detroit's a really good team, and I think after that week one game, everyone was kind of saying, oh, all right, they're done, and that was obviously way too premature. So going to be a really good primetime game. We know that Lamar Jackson and John Harbaugh, though, they love playing Monday night primetime games. So that is a good thing for the Ravens, but we're going to see how that all unfolds. Should be a good one.
Yeah, against NFC teams, they play well, too. All right, real quick, yeah. What's happening at Ravens Wire on this Turn It Up Tuesday?
Yeah, just continuing to finish analyzing what happened in that Cleveland game, trends, things to look for to move along for week three. You can apply there, and then obviously diving into that Detroit game and looking at all the storylines there.
Kevin, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the rest of your Turn It Up Tuesday. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Kev.
Awesome, guys. Appreciate you as always.
Here's Kevin Ostreicher. We'll come back. It's the Whip Around 11-15, two NFL games last night. We'll get to that. Orioles clinched the division on this date. We'll get to that. And a Hollywood megastar who was in sports movies unfortunately passed away today. We'll talk about that as well. Then it's Notes from the North.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Vinny and Haney's Whip Around.
Every sport.
Every game.
Everything.
Brought to you by Box Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes. Best crab cakes in Harford County.
Time for the whip around here on this Turn It Up Tuesday. Two NFL games, Monday night doubleheader. The opener was Tampa at Houston. Tampa, of course, 1-0, coming from behind to win their game. Houston loses their opener, so it's a home opener for the Texans. And Nick Chubb had scored late to give them the lead. But in the end, Baker Mayfield yet again leads a late-game comeback victory.
Hot and in motion. They are going to run it. And a... no signal yet. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Rashad White.
Rashad White, 2 yard score with 6 seconds left in the game. 2-point conversion failed, but it did not prove out to be damaging because they had no timeouts and a lot of way to go. The Houston Texans, as Tampa proves the 2-0, Baker Mayfield, 2 touchdown passes. Bucky Irving got a big chunk play that got them into a position of strength there. And look, this kid, Mika Abuka,
yeah,
from Ohio State, scores yet again. And for the Houston Texans, the favorites to win the AFC South, they're 0-2. I don't want to say they're in crisis mode, but they're not in a good spot, obviously.
No. And what, are they going to Jacksonville this week? So this is going to be a big opportunity for them. They need to get a victory, and they should have had one, you know, last night. They kind of gave that game away. But I'm just not, you know, watching them play, it's not like that's a really good team, you know.
2 years ago, they looked like a team that was going to be a force.
Stroud looked awesome.
For many years, and he's still not a stiff, let's be honest
here. No, not at all.
But he hasn't ascended to this elite quarterback status just yet. And they just, I don't know. They've hit a rut here some way. And, you know, Chubb's not what he was in Cleveland. But, you know, he had the big run that put them ahead late in the game. And they held Tampa to 20 points. But couldn't get a stop when they needed one in the final minute.
Right. And Bob, that's the thing, what Houston's been with D'Amico Ryans. They've been great on defense. And like you just said, they didn't. Tampa took it right down the field, you know, on that last drive to win it.
In the nightcap, if you were up for this one, I'll be honest, I stayed up till halftime to watch it. Kind of snooze fest after watching the Oriole game. Justin Herbert throws for 2 more touchdowns as the Chargers, 20-9 over the Raiders. Geno Smith, he had 3 picks. Ashton Jeanty, welcome to the NFL, son.
Yeah, oh boy.
Having a rough time getting that thing on the ground. Quentin Johnston and Keenan Allen both had touchdown receptions as the Chargers approved to 2-0, and they're on top right now of the AFC West. Bad news for L.A. Looks like Khalil Mack might miss a significant time. Right now he's listed as questionable or doubtful, whatever it is, for their next matchup coming up at Week 3.
Yeah, they got Denver at home. Basically, Bob, this is their first home game because they had the home game, but they were over in San Paulo. So, yeah, their first home game in front of the L.A. fans. And, yeah, Khalil Mack, I doubt that he'll be playing, Bob.
Now, Tom Brady was in the coach's box.
Yeah.
Wearing headphones and a suit. And a lot of hubbub being made about that because of the conflict of interest. He's the owner, part owner of an NFL team, who gets intel during his broadcasting with Fox, everyone assumes. Yeah. And Fox did kind of lighten up the restrictions on him this week. Do you see anything damaging about... Now, you know, when your quarterback throws 3 picks, whatever advice he may have been giving him did not work. Let's look at it this way. But to me, it's a bad look, and it's got conflict of interest written all over.
Yeah. And, Bob, I go back to when I was at the Redskins with Joe Gibbs, and Aikman would come in to do our games, you know, and, like, they would always... The announcers that come out Friday's practice, he would not let Aikman on the field.
Really?
No, he would not let Aikman on the field. That cowboy thing, you know, especially. And if we were playing Dallas, no, wasn't even allowed to come on the field.
Right, and Tom Brady's obviously plays by his own rules.
Yeah.
So you're either an owner, executive, assistant coach, or you're a broadcaster. But he has it both ways, and Fox seems to enjoy what he's done so far. I mean, I don't think he's all that great of a analyst. He's not horrible, but I don't think he's like must listen to television on a Sunday. But it is drawing some national attention. Yeah. Even ESPN had it in their headlines.
Oh, yeah. They keep talking about it.
Yeah.
Because what did I read? That the Raiders play the Bears in 2 weeks, and Brady's doing the Bears game this week or something like that. So, you know, or vice versa, you know. So how fair is that? You know, if Brady goes in and talks to the Bears people and stuff, and the next week they're playing the Raiders, you know, that's not too cool.
Whip around. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. News from the Nest coming up bottom of the hour. Not news from the Nest. Notes from the North. News from the Nest. Top of the hour. But Canelo Alvarez, Canelo, and Terrence Crawford fought Saturday on Netflix. 41 million people watched that fight. 41 million. Boxing. Netflix. You've gouged your audience enough to the point where boxing went from a mainstream to a niche.
Yeah.
Sport. And unless you're like a diehard like myself, you don't even know who half the people are. So this hopefully will be a sign that, you know, boxing wakes up and smells the coffee and tries to reach the broader audience than just doing streaming pay-per-views on Amazon or DAZN. But a pretty significant turnout to watch that one this past Saturday. Orioles history today, September the 16th, 1983, at Memorial Stadium. The Orioles handle their business as Al Bummer, Jim Dwyer, Eddie Murray, and Rich Dower all drove in 2 runs. Cal Ripken at 3. Orioles beat the Brewers on this day. Mike Boddicker, 14-7 on the year, on their way to the World Championship. And believe it or not, Nolan McGraw, 11 years ago today, me and Glenn Yunis, and I believe Steve Regler, we're at Pickles Pub when this happened.
Ground ball to first. There's Pierce. And the Orioles are champions of the AL East.
That voice sounded familiar because that's Jim Hunter on the call. Steve Pierce, he drove it 3 runs. So did Alejandro Diaz. Ubaldo Jimenez, much maligned, he got the win as the Orioles win 8-2 and clinch the American League's Eastern Division Championship for the first time then since 1997. Orioles this year are not going to make the playoffs. Certainly not going to win the division. But 11 years ago today, they handled their business and handled it in a big way. And sad news in the world of Hollywood and did sports-related stuff. Robert Redford passed away at the age of 89, and he was the Natural,
mm-hmm.
which he did in 1984. Wow. At the age of 48.
Damn, that was done in 1984?
And he also did Downhill Racer, where he played a downhill skier who fell in love and got himself into a sports drama genre. Yeah. That was in the early 70s. But The Natural, I thought it was kind of, all right, whatever. I mean, but I got enthralled with it. And, you know, if I'm laying on my big butt watching TV because there's nothing else on and it happens to be on, which I haven't seen in a while, I'll stop and do what I got to do. But Robert Redford and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Sting, I mean, he's been in so many great movies. It just... awesome. Robert Redford, age of 89, rested.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
In peace.
Bengals.
Chase to the end zone. That's a Bengal touchdown.
Browns.
Tossed down. Miles Garrett gets home.
Steelers.
Pressure ball out. Picked up. What? Touchdown Steelers.
Ravens.
Lamar winding up. Going deep for Bateman. He's got it.
The toughest division in football. Notes from the North. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan.
Week 2 of the NFL season is over. It's off to week 3, and we've had some interesting things happen in the AFC North. And Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw on the other side of the glass. Let's get outside of Baltimore and talk about the other teams. Let's go to Cincinnati first. All of our guests, by the way, are brought to you by the Window Nation Guest Hotline. He's on the Fox 19 out there in Cincy. Let's welcome back to the show, Joe Dannemann. And Joe, Cincinnati's 2-0. Good news, bad news, obviously. Joe Burrow's going to be out for at least 3 months. How's that resonated throughout that locker room? And Jake Browning, can he at least keep him above water until Burrow hopefully comes back sometime in December here?
Well, there's confidence in Jake Browning, and I think it's not lip service. I think it's genuine confidence, thinking back to what he did in 2023 after Joe Burrow was injured in Baltimore on Thursday night. He made 7 starts that season. He won 4 of those 7 games. You add in Sunday where he played the majority of the game. So he's 5-3 as the Bengals quarterback when playing the majority of the game. So, yeah, there's confidence here in Cincinnati that he can keep them above water and at least keep them in the race throughout most of the year. But it's an emotional body blow for the organization, for the players, and for the city now to lose Joe Burrow for a third time in 6 seasons. Rookie year, it was the knee. 2 years ago, it was the wrist. Now it's the toe that needs surgery. And it feels like a long shot for Joe Burrow to be back at any point this season. But Jake Browning, that's why he's here. It's his final year in Cincinnati. He has a shot here to earn a big contract if he goes out and plays well. So there's motivation for him to play well, but you can't get past that kind of a body blow that this organization and city is feeling now, losing Joe Burrow for a third time.
Joe, have you seen improvement in the defense?
Yes and no. Yes, that they are turning the ball over more. No, because I'm not sure they've been challenged by an offense that we would underline and circle as saying that's one of the better offenses in the NFL. In fact, week 1 against Cleveland, if you looked at the box score last year, and the Bengals had a terrible defense last year, the box score from the Bengals win in Cleveland last year looked a lot like it did in week 1. And then last week, they were getting picked apart by Trevor Lawrence and Liam Cohen's offense until Trevor Lawrence just lost his ability to hit wide open wide receivers, and his receivers lost the ability to make catches with nobody around them. So I'm still very skeptical of what the Bengals defense is going to be. They're going to be tested, maybe not this week, by a backup quarterback in Carson Wentz. But after that, it's Denver, it's Detroit, it's Green Bay, 3 straight weeks. If you want a temperature check of what the Bengals defense really is, you're going to find out here in the next month.
What have you thought of Shamar Stewart thus far?
He's been good, and that it's been surprisingly good because of what happened in mini camp and the mandatory camps, and then right before training camp of him not being here. But ever since he's walked onto the field, he's been a difference maker and a disruptor on the Bengals defensive line. He's not an elite quarterback sacker. He's yet to get that in the NFL. You look at his college numbers. He just didn't get the quarterback to the ground a lot, but you can see the freakish athleticism he has, the power, the speed, the bend. He's been very disruptive. He's been very good so far in Cincinnati, but now he's injured, and he's doubtful to play this week. It's not a serious injury. They're calling it more week to week, and that he should be back sooner rather than later, but it feels like the Bengals did hit on this draft pick as some guy that Trey Hendrickson's in his final year in Cincinnati. He's going to be gone. We anticipate he won't be back next year. It feels like they've got their guy to replace Trey Hendrickson if Trey does leave.
Joe, real quick, you said backup quarterback. McCarthy's out. Looks like Aaron Jones is going to be out as well, running the football for Minnesota. How surprised will you be if the Bengals are 3-0 after their trip to Minnesota?
I'll be surprised just because of what Minnesota brings to the table defensively, and it's being played in Minnesota, and they still do have offensive weapons. Jordan Mason's looked great so far this year. Justin Jefferson, the receivers, we know what they are. Jake Browning going back to Minnesota, a team who cut him. He's going to have a lot of motivation to win this game. It just feels like a week where the Bengals have to take that kind of adjustment. Now going from Joe Burrow to Jake Browning. When Jake took over in 2023, it looked real clunky in his first start. Now they do have more experience with him, but there's a chance now for Brian Flores and that Minnesota defense to game plan around Jake Browning. I would be surprised if the Bengals do win in Minnesota. But I do think they're going to be in position to win the game because Jake Browning can run this offense.
Joe Dannemann, Fox 19 in Cincinnati. Joe, appreciate the time as always. We will talk to you soon. Now let's go to Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, talk about the Steelers. And let's welcome back to the show Ray Fittipaldo. Ray, we know the Steelers, the lineage, if we're of a certain age, and me and Vinny certainly are. You know, we remember running against the Steelers was always a tall order. First couple of weeks this year, not so much. Where's the run defense?
Yeah, I mean, listen, back in the 70s, I think they had a 43-game streak holding opponents under 100 yards. I think the Ravens actually tied that a while back. And now it's like every other game, they're giving up 100 yards on the ground. They gave up 118 to the Seahawks. They gave up 182 to the Jets. And this is not just a 2025 problem. This goes all the way back to the middle of last season. 11 of the past 21 opponents have rushed for more than 100 yards against them. They're not stalled up front. Their linebackers are light. They're just not getting it done. So this is not going to be an easy fix for Mike Tomlin.
Now, Ray, what about on the other side of the ball? They can't run the ball either.
No, they can't. Actually, Jaylen Warren had a decent game. I think he had like 110, 120 yards from scrimmage, but one of those came on a nice catch and run. So they got production out of their running backs. But, yeah, I mean, listen, 3.4 yards per carry isn't going to get it done, even though it was a big improvement over what they did against the New York Jets. They got a young offensive line. They've invested a lot of high picks. They got two first-round tackles. They got a second-round center. But those guys, to this point, have not developed as they would have liked.
Ray, it just kind of like the wheels fell off because the interception, you know, which could have easily been a touchdown to Freiermuth, and then the kick return for the touchdown, that was game, set, match.
Yeah, I mean, despite how poorly they played up front, you know, getting dominated the way they did physically, they were still in that football game late in the third quarter. I'll give you one other situation that's not being talked about enough. They're at midfield, I think the 48 or 49, facing a 4th-and-1 with about a minute to go in the third quarter. Mike Tomlin elects to punt rather than go for it, and that's been a big issue with this football team. They are not good at those short conversions. You got a 41-year-old quarterback, so you're not going to sneak it. So they're kind of up against it there. I think that's an automatic for a team like the Eagles and a bunch of other teams around the NFL. But when you don't have a running quarterback or a quarterback who is younger, you're not going to be good in those situations. And I thought that was another scenario that went against the Steelers on Sunday.
Ray, last thing for you. Concern level going to New England as favorites against the Pats.
Yeah, listen, it's going to be a long season for the Steelers if they don't turn it around defensively. The Patriots actually put some points on the board last week. I don't know if a lot of people were expecting that. I get it. It wasn't a great opponent. But, yeah, listen, it's on the road. You have shown nothing that you're going to be able to stand up to any semblance of a running game or passing attack to this point. So, listen, this is a game they could win. I just don't know if anyone in Pittsburgh is feeling all that optimistic after watching this team against the Seahawks on Sunday.
Ray Fittipaldo, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, thank you for your time as always. Let's go to Cleveland from The Athletic. Bring in Zach Jackson. And Zach, joining us here in Baltimore. I don't know if you heard, but it was the Ravens' 30th anniversary this past Sunday against the Cleveland Browns. But most importantly for Cleveland, Joe Flacco struggled against his old team. We got to see Dylan Gabriel come in through his first touchdown pass. At what point in time does the Flacco clock expire and we start seeing these young QBs here?
I think it's got a month. And I just think any other plan would be to show panic, right? And maybe panic's the right reaction, and maybe this is going to be a complete disaster. But two games in, you know, the people actually calling the shots can't act that way. So Joe struggled. His receivers let him down. They didn't get open. It got off the rails quickly. They continue to lose like that. There'll be major changes across. But you look at the schedule and you look at the other two options, both being rookies. I think Joe's the best guy for the foreseeable future, and they just have to play better around him, and he obviously has to play better too.
I think Judkins will help him in the run game. He looks like he's got a chance.
He does. He's low to the ground, and you know, it's garbage time, right? But he runs through two or three tackles and takes off on that big run. Mm-hmm. Like, when you get beat like that and you're in the sad state the Browns are in, you'll take any confidence boost you can get. The guy had two practices and played, carried the ball 10 times against the Baltimore Ravens. So, yeah, they need him. They need all the help they can get.
The thing that could be concerning is if the offense continues to turn the ball over, you know, and the defense is playing their ass off, how long before until the defense, you know, it's like, hey, you know, got to help us out somehow, you know, before they start to wear down?
Yeah, that's a real human reaction, right? The fact is, unless the Browns win the turnover margin, they're not going to win the game. And that's certainly going to be the case in Baltimore, but it's going to be the case against anybody on their schedule. So the defense has to play even better in terms of creating them. Flacco and those guys have to limit them. And, you know, if they do create them, they have to score because their margin for error is slim. They should have won in week one, and they didn't. They got run over in week two, and now they play the Packers.
Zach, last thing for you. How do you see the AFC North right now? Every year, toughest division in football, and two, three playoff teams every year with Burrow out and the struggles of the Browns, and Pittsburgh can't stop the run. Ravens have scored 40 points in two games. I've lost one of them. How do you see the AFC North right now?
Yeah, I figure you guys are printing the division champ shirts already Okay. Over there in Baltimore, right? I mean, that's how we'll see you supposed to see it. So I know right. The Ravens have bigger goals than they should, I think. They're darn good. They might have the most talented roster in the league. So I don't know. You know, I was semi-optimistic at least on the Bengals and the Steelers coming in. Steelers, yikes, and the Bengals obviously lose their best player. So we'll see. It's a long, long way. We all know that. There will be crazy results and there will be competitiveness within this division. But I think the Ravens over the course of the last 7 days have gone from above the rest of the division to head and shoulders above the rest of the division.
Zach Jackson, The Athletic. Zach, appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of your Turn It Up Tuesday when we come back. Say hi to Nola McGraw. News from the Nets coming up top of the hour. Buy or sell. Where's the money? Hopefully counting that. And then Rich Dubraw, BaltimoreBaseball.com. Talk about the Orioles. Only 12 games left in the season. But Kyle Bradish, looking ahead to next year, picked up his first win in over a year last night against the White Sox.
Quick Draws Fun House.
Sponsored by the Smile Design Center. Changing the way you feel about dentistry one smile at a time. For information or to schedule an appointment for care, visit them today at smiledesigndoctor.com.
105.7 The Fan.
We'll start with Nelly in Abingdon, who's annoyed by the Ravens' attempts to draw opponents off sides these first 2 weeks. Delay of game penalty aside this past week against the Browns, their attempts themselves are not serious threats to the defense and are almost a waste of an attempt if they're not going to actually show a typical look like it's a real play. Easy to telegraph, I guess, is the point here from Nelly.
Well, situationally, you know, they did get Garrett on the one, you know, and that was a first down play, which was big because it got him 5 more yards. So I tend to disagree. I mean, when you're in that situation, yeah, the defense is kind of thinking about it, but they did get Garrett to jump onto one.
This one here says AFC North, the Ravens again this year, but an even easier path to the top than I anticipated. Go ahead and bury the Bengals right now. Steelers could give the Ravens issues when they meet head-to-head, but I still like the Ravens' chances to win ugly at the very least. Keep it moving from there.
You know what? Right now, Bob, the Steelers, they're kind of like the Terps. They struggled to run, and, well, they stopped the run better, but the offensive line is not good. And that's the thing with Pittsburgh. If you can't stop the run and you can't run it, how do you compete in the AFC North?
But for the Ravens, though, what if they lose to Detroit and go to Kansas City at 1-2?
Hey, then all of a sudden the division...
Am I making something out of nothing here, Nolan?
No, but that shouldn't have been a surprise to anybody 3-4 months ago either. It shouldn't have been
1-3.
No, you said 1-2 going to Kansas City.
Yeah, but if they lose that, then you're 1-3.
All right, and they lose the week after that, they're 1-4. They lost.
I get the point.
Yeah,
right.
But no, this shouldn't shock anybody. This we knew how daunting the schedule was going to be, and yes, to narrow it down to just the first 4 weeks. To come out of that 2-2, it's not ideal, but it's not a shock, or it shouldn't be a shock to anybody, given the opponents.
But are you still running away with the division, is my point here.
I would say yes. Because there's no other division matchups in there. You know, losing to an NFC opponent, for example, like the Lions, doesn't hurt you as much as losing to the Bills did, and obviously not as much as a division opponent.
See, I kind of see it. I don't know that Detroit matches up good with the Ravens, you know? And then you go to Kansas City and you win that one, Bob, and then you're kind of...
Well, you're 3-1 and you're cruising from there. I mean, you don't even play a division game again until November. But losses are losses.
Yep.
That's all I'm saying.
And last text for now, this one Orioles related, says, I expect the O's to give the Yankees everything they can handle in these last few series. They did take the season series from New York in 2023 and last year. This year, it's currently tied 3-3. I think the Orioles get it again. Don't knock them all the way out of the playoffs, but they will cost them home field.
In the wild card situation here, that would be a beautiful thing to see. Because, you know, of course, I hate the Yankees. I don't apologize for that. Most people listening feel the same way that I do. Take care of the White Sox first. Because you went to Toronto and had a chance to do damage, and you basically got your pants pulled down in two of those three games. But they do tend to take it to another level when the Yankees come to town. So we shall see. D. Kramer back on the hill for the Orioles tonight as they look to win the series against Chicago. Talk about that at 12:30 with Rich Dubroff. When we come back, however... news from the NASCAR to hear from John Harbaugh. Met with the media yesterday talking about his team. If you missed any of that, stick around and hopefully count some Turn Up Tuesday money because the old Bobster had a bad day with the scratch-off.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.